I'll give you Wayne M. from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Thank you. I'm Wayne Mishy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I first want to thank you people for giving me the privilege of coming up to your beautiful country and seeing something I would never have seen had I not found this fellowship. Also to the committee and to B and J Holland, you know, I got to keep their anonymity. And anyway, I'm grateful to just be able to stand here and share the gift of sobriety, which I believe God, as I understand him, has given to me. And I think God became willing to accept that a little over 16 years ago. I didn't accept it easily and readily. And briefly, as far as drinking, I drank for 28 years. The last 14 of those 28 years were supplemented with the so-called non-habit-forming, non-addictive drugs, which the doctors prescribed for me. And if there's anybody out there that's trying to get well on them, I can only tell you the ones that didn't work for me. And they included Dexedrine, Phenobarbital, Miltown, Cirax, Librium, Valium, Equinol, Stelazine, Thorazine, Melaril, Elavil, and Ritalin. All by prescription, and I can honestly say that there were very few times during that 14-year period that I cheated, as I've heard some members of AA say, where I only had one doctor prescribing, and I took them according to the prescribed dosages. And I ended up completely nuts. You know, that's what it is. I also had 3 years of psychotherapy. One lost home job and family, three drunk driving charges, and one suicide attempt. Outside of that, things were going pretty good. I attended my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on Labor Day of 1969, and I didn't go there for me. I went there to take my next door neighbor to Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew he was a bad drunk and he needed it. And we went out and got drunk together and went to the AA meeting. It was a sad affair. And I knew those people up there were very sad. So the next week I called Jimmy and I said, Jimmy, get your guitar and we'll go out and have a few beers. And I'm a big shot up at that church that we're going to this meeting at. And I'll talk to the leader of the meeting and get him to let you play and sing a few songs for him because they're pretty sad. That'll give you a little idea how goofy I was. We went up there and I talked to the secretary of the meeting, told him what I suggested, and he said, well, we don't really do that around here. And I said, come on, Jimmy, we'll go get drunk, they can all go to hell. 15 months, and I'm not proud of this, and for those newcomers here, this isn't the way to do it, but it was the way it happened with me, and I can't change it. For 15 months, I kept going to those meetings drunk. I figured in my mind...
Can I excuse you for a minute?
Surely. There's a Honda with a license plate 339 BCP blocking Rondo's path, and he has to get medication. A Honda, 339 BCP license plate.
Utah.
Utah.
There's some people on the patio now.
Pardon?
There's some people on the patio.
They're watching that on TV.
I'm sorry. No problem. No problem.
No, I want to get my car out. Anybody else has got the same problem, they're all bluffed. Nobody can get out.
Yeah. Yeah, I parked my car in a bad place. I told them I parked way over there in the corner. They want to throw rocks at me when this thing is over. I got to get the hell out of here fast. That I started to say, I kept going up those meetings drunk. And after I'd been going up there about 3 or 4 months, one of the guys came over to me And he said, you know, are you an alcoholic or what are you? And I said, no, I'm not alcoholic. I'm a friend of the minister of the church. And he sent me up here to watch over you so you won't tear the room up, you know. That'll give you another indication of where my brain was at that time. At 10 months, the meeting that I got sober in, they used to pass a tablet around. And you signed your name and the date of your last drink. And they did that for birthday purposes. And I'm sure Molly... alcoholics around here know about birthdays or anniversaries, whatever you want to call them. And they kept the same damn tablet. And I kept signing up and signing up every week I was up there, you know, and they kept the same tablet. And I'm going through it one night, and I'm about page 7, and my name is there, and I'm about 3 times on every page. And the guy sitting next to me said, Wayne, why don't you wait till you quit drinking for a week before you sign up? And I got pretty angry about that, you know. I said, mind your own damn business. And the night that I surrendered, thank God, I'd like to share that with you. I only had about 2 drinks that night. And I was working in downtown Los Angeles. I got sober in Los Angeles. I was working at the furniture market down there. And I was going up to the meeting. And I decided, well, I'll only have a couple tonight. And I did. And on the way out to there, it's about 18 miles from downtown L.A. out to the church where the meeting was held. On the way out there, I had a tremendous sweet odor in my car, which I identified as what is called tincture of benzoin. I used to be some kind of a half-fast football player. Half-fast, that is. I was pretty slow. And... once you smelled benzoin, you never forget the smell. It's a deep, sweet, permeating odor. We used it when we played on game day. You taped your ankles and you shaved your ankles and you painted this stuff on. It's a skin toughener. And I thought to myself on the way out, I said, man, there must be, somebody must have spilled a bottle of benzoin on the freeway. So I opened the windows and I turned the air conditioner on, and that odor stayed with me all the way up to that church for 18 miles. I was also one, incidentally, who never stood up as a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I had too much pride. And I knew how this meeting was conducted, the way they did it. It was a candlelight meeting. And they did all the preliminaries, the reading of Chapter 5, the asking for the newcomers, et cetera, while all the lights were on in the room. And then when they started the discussion, they turned the lights out and they had full 5 or 6 candles. So I knew that, so I would sit out in the parking lot until they turned the lights out, and then I would sneak in the back door. But that particular night, as I walked into that meeting, my mind was working. Now, admittedly, it was crazy, but it was doing things. And I thought, I wonder what that sign meant that sweet smell, you know, on the freeway. And the only thing that I could determine was that I was going to go into some kind of a game, because we only did this on game days when you taped your ankles. And I got in there, and the meeting was going on, and there was a lot of discussion. Naturally, I wasn't listening, as usual. And finally, I started to get little thoughts came into my head. And the first one was, what in the hell is the matter with you? Everybody here is seemingly happy and seemingly sober, and you're half drunk and miserable. The next thought that came into my mind was the word resentment. Resentment is the mortal enemy of an alcoholic. That's the only thing that I had heard in 15 months ago in those meetings. And then the next thought was, well, what do you resent? You know, what is this resentment? And I happened to turn to my left, and there was my friend Danny, the guy that had suggested that I quit drinking for a week before I signed up, and I hated his guts. And I said, that's it. I resent him. He's the reason that I'm still drunk. The next thought was, well, maybe if you went over to him after this meeting is over, and maybe if you apologize, maybe something would happen. So I did. I waited till the meeting was over, and I went over to Danny, and I said, Danny, I'm sorry for the way I've been acting around here for the last 15 months. The first thing he said to me is, okay, are you willing to admit now that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life has become unmanageable? And I said, yes. And when I said yes, I believe I had, for me, the first spiritual experience probably in my whole life. Because it started right at the top of my head, and it started to go through my body in waves. Waves of joy, relaxation, the peace that passes understanding, as the big book says. I don't know. I can't describe it. It was just a fantastic feeling. And when I got down to my knees, I got so relaxed that I almost fell down. My knees started to buckle. And I guess Danny didn't want me to fall down, so he came right back and said, "Do you want to admit you're nuts?" And that stung a little bit, and I damn near belted him. I'll tell you, it was awful close. But I think that guy upstairs interfered again, and I said, "Yeah, I guess I must be, for the way I've been acting around here for the last 15 months. He said, "Okay, are you willing to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't think I've ever really had a big problem with that." He said, "Fine, you have now taken the first three steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it'll be unnecessary for you to take a drink or a pill one day at a time the rest of your life." Now, that was on December 1st of 1970. And it has been unnecessary for me to do that, and I'm grateful to God and all of Alcoholics Anonymous and all the love that's in these rooms for that sobriety. You see, the way I look at it today, I've had 16 and a half years of all free time. It's all free. I should have been dead. I tried suicide back in March of 69. I failed. Most alcoholics mess that up too. You know, we don't get that job done. Now I'll go back a little bit following that suicide attempt. You see, I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous even for 6 months after I had tried suicide. And I didn't quit drinking. I'm not proud of it. But I didn't quit drinking for probably, I guess it was another 20 months, or a total of about 20 months, something like that. But after I tried suicide, a very dear friend over in the LA area is my minister. And Don came up to me at the hospital the next day. And he used to be an ex-UCLA All-American football player. He's about 6'3", and even today he weighs about 220. And he took a hold of my arm and he said, "Why in the hell didn't you tell me?" I'd never heard a minister talk like that. "Why in the hell didn't you tell me?" And my only honest answer was, "Don, I didn't know. He said, "Okay." And I found out this too. Ministers can be pretty good con men. You know, they ain't all the alkies ain't, you know, all the con men aren't Alcoholics Anonymous. So he said, "You know, I have to have breakfast alone on Friday morning out of Dupar's in Encino." He said, "Would you come out and join me?" Now here's a guy who just tried suicide the day before, is all messed up, and I said, "Oh, sure, I'll come out and help you." You know, that's the way I thought. So I went out to talk to that man that morning, and the first question he asked me, he says, "Mish is my nickname, incidentally. That's what everybody called me. I didn't have the name Wayne till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "Have you ever had a problem? Do you have a problem with alcohol?" I said, "Don, I don't know." He said, "Have you ever not supported your family because of your use of alcohol?" And I said, "No, that's never happened. They've always had a pretty nice home, swimming pool and all that." He said, "Okay, have you ever sold any of your belongings to get money to buy alcohol?" And I said, "No, I've never done that." And he said, "Well, then you probably don't have a problem with alcohol." You know, and that was a mistake, but as I see it today, it's probably one of the greatest mistakes the man could have made, because I don't know about anybody else, but in my case, having been brought up as a staunch Lutheran and all that, and all the fear involved, I didn't think that a minister, a rabbi, or a priest could ever make a mistake. I thought they had a straight line to God, and he gave them all the right answers, and those were the only answers. But Don made a mistake, and it was great, because now that man, and he is a man, is on my level. And I can talk to him because he can make a mistake. And that was very meaningful to me in my AA experience. Now, it didn't come to me until later, much later. After I surrendered that night, I would like to tell you that immediately everything was beautiful. It wasn't. I managed to get a new job. It lasted 5 weeks. And then all hell broke loose as far as the emotions, the feelings, the fear, and all of that set in. For the next 11 weeks, the depression. For the next 11 weeks, I was in a depression, unable most of the time to even attend an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But thank God I had one guy from my church, was in AA, And I would call Bill every day, and I'd say, Bill, I can't make it. I don't know what's going to happen. And he'd say, Wayne, just keep praying, you know. And I said, I've done that, Bill. I accept every position I know how, except standing on my head, and I'd do that if I could. He said, just keep doing what you're doing. And then one day I got a call at 4 months sober. A guy said, there's a job open over in a furniture store over in Glendale. You won't be making anywhere near the money you used to make, but you'll be making 100% more than you're making right now. And that made sense. And I went over and I got that job. And I started to grow just a little bit. I will tell you that the morning that I went to work for the first time after being 4 months sober, I prayed all the way over there, Lord, just let me have the strength to stay there all day long. Don't let me go home and pull the covers over my head. And God, I was scared. But I made it that first day, and the next day it got a little easier, and it became a one day at a time deal. And I got a sponsor in another month, and we became friends up to a point. The point came at 8 months when I really think I'm recovered and I'm really going to hit it now. And I'm telling them one day what a great salesman I am. And now that I'm sober, I'll probably be the best that ever hit Los Angeles. He listened to me for about 5 minutes and leaned back in his chair and he said, you know, it wasn't until I was around here about 2 years that I figured out how goddamn crazy I still was during the whole first year. Now, I knew that he knew I was only 8 months sober and I fired him. You see, we got, there's a guy speaking up over in Laughlin in our tri-state roundup right now, Franklin W. from Franklin, or from Olive Branch, Mississippi, and he said, new friends, you get yourself a sponsor. At the end of 90 days, if you like that man, you got the wrong person. Well, anyway, I got rid of Ted, and incidentally, Ted is one of the circuit speakers now around, and he and I are great friends today, and we laugh like hell about how goofy I was, you know. I was also, just to tell you what I was like in recovery, I was 8 months sober before I could memorize the three-line serenity prayer. I couldn't keep the lines in order. There was no possible way, and I tried. God, I tried. And I used to stand in front of the mirror in that early sobriety, that first year, and look in there and say, my God, are you ever going to get your mind back? You see, I believe I was fortunate in one respect. After being around AA for a while, I found a lot of people had cirrhosis of the liver, pancreatitis, and all those good things. I never had that. The physical part there, mine was all mental. My brain was shot, burned out, whatever you want to call it. I got that job in a furniture store, and at 7 months sober, tell a little story, I couldn't add three numbers together and get the right answer. So if a lady would come in and buy a sofa and a chair and ask to start looking at tables and lamps, I'd look at her and say, well, we don't have a very good selection this time. Why don't you come back next week? See, I couldn't tell her I couldn't add three numbers together and get the right answer. But I kept going on AA, and I got a new sponsor, and people, you know, kept the love of this program was just fantastic, you know. In our book, it says that lack of power is our dilemma. And then I heard a minister talk about love being power. And I started to understand a little bit about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The love in this program gives us the power that is our dilemma. The lack thereof is our dilemma, according to the book. And I kept growing a little bit, and I've had some fantastic experiences. Incidentally, we didn't ask here, are there any people here with less than 30 days sobriety? And if there are, would you just raise your hand, just so I know? All right, congratulations, and we're glad you're here. This is the only place you'll ever be when they're going to clap for you when you tell them you're drunk, I'll tell you that, you know. We love you. You know, we hope you find here what is here. A whole brand new life. You see, I believe in the rebirth today, and I won't get into my deep persuasion. Sometimes that's a little sensitive in an AA meeting, but I am of the Christian persuasion. I was prior to getting here, but I'm far better today in understanding that. Just last week, in my office, I happened to be the manager of a club we have down in Scottsdale, and therefore, when there's nobody else around to take calls, I take some of them. And I had two people, one male and one female. Both born-again Christians, both drunk. And we're talking, you know. And I said, I understand what you're saying, you know. But the thing they couldn't understand is why they were drunk. And I told them it was because they were drinking. You know, that's why they were drunk. You see, that's it. If there's anybody out there who's got a problem with this program, check your drinking. That is probably the problem, you know. But I tell you, my heart hurt when I was talking to these people, and I don't get into scripture quoting and all that, you know, unless I have to, if I think it will help. And we're playing these little games on the phone. I was on the phone with a woman, that night afterward, for 2 hours. You know, and I couldn't pound it through her head that the reason that you're drunk is because you're drinking. You know, that's it. And new friends, that's what you got to do here. You got to quit drinking. That's how this program works. I mean, that's a lot of people miss that. You know, they really do. And I missed it myself, and that's why I'm emphasizing it. You see, I'm going to meetings drunk all the time, and they're saying you're supposed to stop drinking, but I didn't hear it. See, I thought I was a little better. I got the 3 drunk driving charges after I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I never had one, and there's a message there. You know, you got to quit drinking, you know. One of my dear friends in the program, a guy's about 39 years sober now, Fast Eddie, says, you know, if you know the difference between whiskey and water, you got a 50-50 chance of staying sober. And he also talks to the new friends, and he said, you know, I envy you, and I do too. I really do envy the newcomer coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, because you got a whole new adventure in life ahead of you. You see, I've experienced some of these miracles myself, and I wouldn't trade them to you. I'll try to share them with you. But you got to have your own, you know, and you will have them if you just stick around here. We stick around here, and we help each other. Around our club, we just say we drink coffee, tell lies, and stay sober, and that's what we do, you know. I was also told, you know, I was sharing in a meeting this morning, a marathon meeting, and when I came in, I can see the time frame now. I was very fortunate and very grateful for the fact that there were never less than 8 guys at my home group stag with less than 20 years sobriety. And sometimes they were 14 or 24, 26, 28, and sometimes there were 14 or 15 of them there. And I got to tell you, they didn't do it then the way they do it today. And I shared it with one young man this morning. If he'd have said in that meeting what he said this morning, and I'm not putting him down, some of the old timers would have jumped on him and said, get the hell out, you know. If you've even got a thought that you may want to have another drink, get out right now, because we need the chair you're sitting in, you know. That was the old timers, you know, and I mean old time, they were tough. The old line was, if you still had a watch, you know you weren't ready for this program yet. And there was a hangover of that kind of guy, and that's what I needed. Just share one that they pulled on me, or they didn't pull it on me, I was myself. I'm about a year sober. And I had the beautiful opportunity of meeting my ex-wife's new boyfriend that morning at the house that I had bought. And I had the opportunity to clean the pool and trim the bushes while he was sitting in the kitchen that I bought, drinking coffee that I probably bought. And at a year sober, I wasn't too serene, if they were. You know. I was nuttier than hell, to tell you the truth, all day long. So I went to my home group stag meeting that night, and that gang always used to have dinner together, 20 or 30 of us, and then we'd go to the meeting. My new sponsor happened to be the secretary of that meeting, and I knew Tony knew who the speakers would be, or we had a chairman that picked the speakers. It was 5-minute pitches, we call it, over there. So I casually at dinner, I said to Tony, I said, who's leading the meeting tonight? He said, I don't know. Oh, okay. He waited about 15 minutes and he said, why did you ask me who's leading tonight? I said, because I'm nuttier than hell and I don't want to be called on tonight. He said, when we finish dinner, you get in that car And on the way down to that meeting, you start saying the Serenity Prayer, and you ask God to take over, and you don't have anything to do with it. If you're supposed to be called on, you'll be called on. And that's the way it is. And I want to stay sober, and I want to do what my sponsor said, so I did it. And sure enough, about the fourth person to be called on was dear little old Wayne. And I got up and I told him how crazy I was over this situation that I just had that morning and my sad tale of woe. And I sat down right about where he's sitting. An old timer named Wally was leading the meeting. He pointed down at me and said, "Just remember this, asshole. There ain't nothing so bad in your life that you can't make it worse by drinking, and don't you ever damn forget it." And man, I wanted to hit the floor, you know. But that's the way it was, and that's the way I needed it. I want to share a few things from guys that have taught me a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'll be forever grateful for. Some of them are dead today. One guy is a guy named Jimmy Ryan. Maybe some of you have heard him, maybe you haven't. Jimmy died about 5 years ago. And when Jimmy spoke, I heard him 5 or 6 times before it really hit me. He would always quote the foreword to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show others precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." That's an exact quote. And the "precisely how we have recovered" is italicized. And I wasn't much of an English student in high school or college, but I did learn that when they italicize something in a sentence, they did it for emphasis. It means exactly what it says, "precisely how we have recovered." Well, I heard Jimmy say that about 6 times, and one night, about the 6th time, I said, "You know, that guy's getting something out of that thing that I'm not getting out of it. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to read it, and maybe, and read it, and read it, and read it, and maybe I will get from those lines what Jimmy evidently has." And after I read it about the 7th time, it came to me. This book was written by the first 100 drunks that got sober, people just like me. It was written in my time, 1939. And I could identify with that. I was alive in 1939. I read another book that was written 1900 years ago, and I believe it, but I can't identify. I wasn't there. And I said, that must be what Jimmy's getting out of it. And today, I believe that that's what he was getting out of it. He was a hell of a speaker and a hell of an AA guy. One of his best lines was, "All an alcoholic is a speaker looking for an audience, and that's why I'm here." You know? When I was 3 years sober, I heard another great guy. Some of you have heard him, a guy named Chuck C. from Laguna Beach. And Chuck was speaking to a newcomers group. And newcomer, listen, this is the greatest thing that I ever heard. I was 3 years sober when I heard him say this. And he said, "There are 2 things that have to happen before we can take the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous." Now, I'm 3 years sober, and I think I'm pretty smart. You know, I always did. I probably still do. One of these days, I'll get dumb, I hope. But anyway, he got my attention, and he went on to say, he says, "Those 2 things are 2 lines in our book. One's on page 30, and it says, 'We learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery.'" And then he said the other line, the other thing is in chapter 5. It's read at every meeting practically. And it says, "If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps." Those are actually both exact quotes. And I had never heard those 2 lines put together before. But I damn near jumped off the chair with joy that night because I finally realized what really happened the night that I surrendered. I finally decided I wanted what AA had. I didn't know I was doing it. I still didn't know. Today, I don't know, but maybe I decided the opposite side of the coin. Maybe I decided I didn't want what I had anymore. But I went over and I made that amend, or that, you know, that apology for Danny. And I was one resentment out of my mind, out of my heart, and I was given the gift of sobriety. That's a hell of a package, you know. Got to give up one resentment and you'll be given 16 half years of sobriety. And all I had to do was just show up at these meetings. Another great speaker over has passed away now, a guy named Norm Alpe, always said, no, alcoholic, just show up. If you show up, that's better than you did when you were drinking. You know, that's right. You know, just show up. That's all you got to do, newcomer. Show up. Show up and shut up. You know, that's what they used to... They used to tell me that a lot, I'll tell you. Another thing happened to Chuck with Chuck one night. I went over to him after the meeting, and I said, you know, this thing is working for all you guys around here. I can see that because I see them Lincolns and Cadillacs sitting out in front of this building. And I said, I ain't got one. And he looked at me and he said, how old were you when you quit drinking, son? Oh, man, I was about ready to belt him, you know. And I said, 44. He said, well, I'll tell you something. He said, they fired me from my company for drinking when I was 44. Today, I own it. He said, you just stick with this program and everything's going to be all right. And another guy looked at me and he said, how long did you drink? I said, 28 years. He says, does it make any common sense or logic to you at all that in 8 months' time, you're going to undo 28 years of messing up? And I had to look at it and I said, yeah, I guess. It happened, I know, in AA. I'm 6 years sober. Again, Chuck was talking. And he's talking about the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I believe for me, 3 and 11 are two of the most important steps in there. They're all important, but the way it is for me, and it's only me, that's the way I look at it. And anyway, he made the statement. He said, and on the third step, he said, if you have really done the third step, if you have really done it, then you are no longer your problem. The step says, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And if I have truly done that, then I ain't got nothing to do with it anymore. I gave it to him. And I suddenly started thinking, and I didn't do that step, incidentally, until I was 2 years sober, the way it says in the book. See, I'm a book man today. I wasn't initially, but for those of you who question that, you find it on page 63 of the book. And it says in there that it is we should do this with another person. But Bill Wilson, in the way he wrote, he always gave you an out. And I use that out. The out was, but it's best you don't do it with somebody who might misunderstand. And I used that until I was over 2 years sober. And finally, I had to do it. And I had to do it the way it says in the book. And it says you do this with another person. What you do is say a prayer, which I finally memorized when I was 8 years sober, because I had to do something to get rid of a lot of pain in my life. And I had procrastinated for 8 years. You see, you're listening, you know, a guy standing up here now that couldn't memorize the Serenity Prayer until he was 8 months sober. So I tried a lot of things in memory. One of the first things I memorized that has helped me, Abe Lincoln was mentioned by our Al-Anon speaker. I received some bookmarks as a little AA birthday present, and one of them had a line on it from Abe Lincoln where he said, I have been many times driven to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I had no place else to go. My own wisdom and that of all about me seemed insufficient for that day. And man, that was something for me, and I memorized that, and today I still believe it. You know, there's many days that I don't have any place else to go, except down on my knees and ask for that help. And then one day I was 3 years sober, and I'm reading a meditational thing that my mother got, and I'll close with this. I really did it. It's a beautiful thing, I think. And I also wanted to see if my mind would still function well enough. And here's how it goes. I'll tell you what it is when I finish. The Lord is my pace setter. I shall not rush. He makes me stop and rest for brief intervals. He leads me in the ways of effectiveness through calmness of mind. And his guidance is peace. Even though I have many things to accomplish each day, I will not fret, for his presence is here. His timelessness, His all-importance will keep me in balance. He provides refreshment and renewal in the midst of my activity by anointing my mind with His oil of tranquility. My cup of joyous energy overflows. Surely harmony and effectiveness shall be the fruits of my hours, for I shall walk in the pace of my Lord and dwell in His house forever. And what that is the Japanese or American translation of the Japanese version of the 23rd Psalm. And it would take an alcoholic to go figure that one out. And it's also a long way of saying easy does it. God bless and thank you.